Joining us right now is Eric Aitken. He is from the website. He is the founder of protectjewishkids.org. Good afternoon, Eric. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry about the rant. I've stolen some of your time, but it is something that is just, I actually feel faint when I talk about it. It's such a difficult, difficult subject to talk about. Eric, why, you heard my question, and you and I did chat about this. Why do you think the tendency is to deny, firstly, that there's even a possibility that this person could be involved with sexual harassment or whatever it is, and blame the victim?
So I think that in the Orthodox Jewish community, which is mostly what I'm focusing on, there's a belief that Orthodox society is pristine, it's spiritual, and that nothing bad happens if you're in the Orthodox community. And when people come to the information that there are rabbis and there are prominent community members that commit horrific acts of child sexual abuse, and many of these molesters are serial offenders and they do this for decades. So that information is extremely disconcerting to members of the Orthodox community. And their reaction is usually to deny the information, even if it's been proven in a court of law. They still don't believe it. And to protect their community and their beliefs about their society, they will then turn against the victim or the survivor, and they will denigrate and humiliate and ostracize them to try to prevent that information from becoming public into the community.
Why is there such disbelief? I mean, if I think back, I can't think exactly when it was, but it was many years ago. I think, when was it? Around about 2009, 2010, somewhere around there. Here in South Africa, there was a rabbi who, mistakenly, he was involved with many female members of his, and I'm talking about he had sexual relationships with many of the female members of his community. Each one thought that they were unique, and whatever the case may be. He was eventually caught out. He sent an SMS to one of the husbands instead of sending to the wife, and it was obviously the wrong kind of SMS as well to be getting from your spiritual leader. He admitted to it. He said that he had a sex addiction. He went off to Israel. He did tshuva. He went into a yeshiva. His title of rabbi was taken back. Today, he is the spiritual leader of a Jewish community in Port Elizabeth. Why is it that we remain in denial? Is it some kind of, I don't know, are we commanded that we have to forgive people? Or is it just idiot compassion?
So I think it's completely misplaced compassion. The Torah certainly does not condone criminal acts. And adultery is absolutely forbidden. And the Torah actually makes it a death penalty crime. So if a person has committed adultery, and especially repeatedly, according to the Torah, he would be submitted to the death penalty. We don't impose that anymore. We haven't in over 2,000 years. But I think the community is so entrenched in their belief that that a rabbi cannot do any wrong because they're the spiritual leaders, that they're willing to suspend all reason and rational behavior to try to reinstate these rabbis and to give them a position of power, because the psychological term is cognitive dissonance. And it's when you're presented with a set of facts that are contrary to your beliefs. So in the Orthodox Jewish community, they can't comprehend that a rabbi could commit adultery, that a rabbi could rape children, that a rabbi can do horrific, horrific crimes. And in my website, I've documented 800 people, most of whom have either been arrested for or convicted of child sex crimes. And the numbers that I'm coming up with are extraordinary. And this is all public record. I don't work with blogs or people saying, oh, I heard this or I heard that. This is coming from law enforcement. And to have a list of this many people is just completely out of proportion to our population. And in my belief, the sexual offenses in the Orthodox community are far worse than what we even see in the Catholic community.
Wow, that's a shocking
this is my co-host,
thing to be
Simon.
Able to say. Hi there. Yeah, I must say, this is the first time I've gone on to your website, and it is eye-opening. I expected the sexual abuse. I didn't expect acid thrown in faces of people. It's taken me to a place that I never thought one would go, specifically, naively, in the context of a Jewish community. I'm just not used to this kind of thing happening. So my question for you, Eric, is twofold. Is your personal journey, are you considered an enemy by the establishment? Or, you know,
yeah, how you viewed with
how you viewed, and I also want you to talk to protectjewishkids.com. Where are, is this an American-based organization, Israelis? Just talk to both of those issues for me, please.
So the first one is, I tried for several years, around the time that I was thinking about starting my website, which I started about 4 years ago. So I spent about the first 2 years trying to get rabbis to support putting together child protection protocols to be implemented in Jewish institutions. And I also wanted to get rabbis and Jewish institutions to support an international database of convicted child sex predators. Because what happens is these predators go from community to community, and they abuse children, and they will do it for decades. And without a database within the Jewish community, you'll never know who these people are. So for the first 2 years that I tried this, I got stonewalled. Rabbis would not return my phone calls. They wouldn't respond to emails. I spoke to the heads of the Rabbinical Council of America, which is the largest Orthodox rabbinical organization in the world. They have over 1,000 member rabbis. And they've passed numerous child protection resolutions, but they don't implement any of them. And when I asked the head of it, when will you implement these procedures? He said, I'm not going to promise to do anything. And indeed, they don't. After 2 years of being stonewalled, I gave up. I stopped trying to get approval or support from the Jewish community. But what I'm doing now is, this is for the benefit of the parents and anybody in the community that wants to see if the man sitting next to their child in synagogue, the man who's teaching their child in a Jewish school, has been convicted of a child sex offense or been arrested for one.
Hugely concerning, so that might be a reality. You know, if there's no sexual
database
of people who are guilty of sexual harassment or pedophilia or whatever the case is, how are you supposed to reference? I mean, we see this in the boarding schools, in the UK. Huge sexual abuse. Eric, I just wanted to ask you, how do we also prevent innocent people from being accused? Because we live in a world where today children have access to information beyond what they had in the past. And a child who's perhaps got it in for a teacher, got it in for a sports coach.
Yeah, very easy.
Can make that accusation. As soon as that accusation is out there, I can tell you now the person's life is ruined. Ruined. Even if they are innocent.
Yeah.
There will always be, people will say, where there's smoke, there's fire. How do we deal with that reality?
So I think that you need to look at the statistics. Statistically speaking, there are almost no false reports made by children for sexual offenses against adults. In the cases that it does happen, it's extremely rare, and we're talking a few percent. And very often those are in child custody cases where the child has been coached by a parent to falsely accuse the other parent. I think that if a child were to make an accusation against a teacher, against a rabbi, and it was a false one, you'd have to look at why the child would want to get into details that most children would not have of a sexual nature. they would be investigated by the police, and I think it would be discounted very quickly because the police have the experience and the knowledge of what a child would go through if they were sexually abused. But as a practical matter, it almost never happens. And in my own experience of 4 years of being an advocate, I can't think of any instance that I've come across where a child has falsely accused somebody of being a sex offender.
So interesting.
Eric, is there a corollary between religiosity and denial? So, for example,
I believe so, because I'm also in very close contact to a number of advocates in the Catholic community, and they've been fighting child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church for 25 years. I've only been doing this for 4. So in my discussions with them, they say that any closed society will be ripe for abuse. So what they see is they see it in the Catholic Church, they see it in the Jewish community, they see it in the Muslim community, they see it in Mormons, they see it in Anabaptists, they see it in every religious community. The big danger is when you have somebody who is a religious figure who is considered to be infallible or beyond question, and that you live in a community that is intolerant of dissent or questioning. And we see this in the Orthodox community. Kathy had referenced the way that some survivors are viciously attacked by the members of the community, because when somebody comes forward and says, "This rabbi raped me," you're challenging people's religious beliefs.
Sure.
And they will fight against that, and they will do what they can to silence the person who's giving you that information.
Unfortunately, Eric, that's where we have to leave it today. I'm sure that this won't be our last conversation with you. And you know what? I'm sincere when I say I hope that your work is no longer necessary and that you have to find another job one day.
Absolutely.
I hope so too.
Absolutely.
Eric, thank you very, very much. And
it's my pleasure.
All the best.